Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is A Barrel of Problems. Of course, this is a play on words when it comes to oil, but there are so many other aspects of what is taking place right now that we have to throw them all into the barrel. So we're going to talk about market performance. We're going to have a follow-up with the oil markets. We're going to talk about perhaps an opposite reaction that might take place in the gold and silver market, and perhaps the broader precious metal space as well, but particularly that with gold and silver. We'll get to that in a moment. A brief immigration update. We talked briefly last night about President Trump's tweet and the oncoming executive order to halt or suspend temporarily immigration, so we'll give you a brief update on that. The CDC director is warning that the potential for a second wave is serious and it could be worse than the first. Congress passed a nearly $500 billion package. They don't have the money. So what? The United Nations is raising the alarm bells for a food crisis of biblical proportions. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, is contemplating debt forgiveness and bailouts. I'm not calling them their rescue packages because that's not what they are, they're bailouts, to the tune of about $1 trillion. They don't have the money either. And then the amount of central bank printing since all of this nonsense entered the fifth, sixth, seventh gear is now north of $20 trillion, around $23 trillion. Just for a little context, that's slightly larger than the entire GDP of the United States of America. So think about that for a little bit, why don't you? But market performance today, the markets did sell off. And surprisingly, maybe not so much yet. Maybe there truly are cracks in the foundation. Maybe this money printing isn't the panacea that all the crackheads on Wall Street think that it is. Of course, time will tell. We think it's a fraud. We think it's a criminal front, criminal operation. And we think it will inevitably and ultimately fail. But we could be wrong. Maybe the money printing will prove to be a panacea, but I doubt that. Because the major index that sort of led the decline in today's trading session was finally the NASDAQ. Typically, the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ 100, nothing. They're the ones that hold up. They're the ones that make it into the green at the end of the day. Or they're the ones that keep the whole market up. Well, today they led it to the downside. And as we've been saying here for a very, very long time, what typically leads up is what leads you down. So the NASDAQ 100 were down about 3% today. The S&P and the Dow were not too far behind. Similar story with the Russell 2000, the small cap index. At the time of this podcast, we have the Japanese markets, the Nikkei 225 down 1.25%. Across the pond in Europe, down across the board, anywhere from 2 to 3.5%, depending on the index. Right now, the Australian markets are also down about 1/3 of 1%. On the commodity front, we have, wow, what a rebound. What a rebound from yesterday's historic price level of -$38 a barrel. In fact, it hit -$40, but it settled around -$38 a barrel. And again, this was at the end of the May contract. But nevertheless, this is the first time in history that we have seen negative prices with WTI. History in the making, folks. You understand, these are crazy and very interesting times to be alive. This is part of the great unraveling, one of our podcasts. This is part of Deaths by a Thousand Cuts, another one of our podcasts. This is part of the everything bubble bursting, the things we talk about here on a near daily basis. The distortions, the malinvestment, the debt chickens coming home to roost. Are you starting to understand the picture? Are you starting to put the pieces of this puzzle together? Do you see the dots that you are connecting, the picture that it is painting? Are you honest with yourself? We have barely scratched the surface. This is the tip of the iceberg. Negative 40. Now, today, WTI is trading at $11.03. But again, like I was saying, that was the end of the May contract. Now we're in the month of June, being the front month in the futures market for oil. Okay? And we said, be on the lookout for this. Will the June contract enter negative territory? If it does, make no mistake about it, something is structurally broken. Something is taking place in the oil market. Something is going down. Something is very, very wrong. Okay? I am not a commodities or oil expert, but I do my best to listen and to read from people who I think are credible in this space and do my best to relay their information to this audience. That's what I do. I'm a macroeconomist. I'm good at putting the pieces of the puzzle together. That's what I do. I synthesize information very well. Absorb it, think about it, summarize it, and put it out there. Whether that be in a book, whether that be on our website at the Capital News, whether that be our podcast, whatever it is, that's my forte, that's my lane, and I do my best to stay in it. I do not proclaim or pretend to be an expert on everything because I'm not. Not even close. So I'm not going to play commodity oil expert or anything else for that matter. But you have to understand that if we enter negative territory again in the fresh front month of June, well, then we got a problem. We got a big problem. As far as I'm concerned, we got a big problem regardless. But now you're going to know that something structurally is broken. What that's going to be, time will tell. Another pause for concern is now Brent. Yesterday, Brent, the international metric, held up. It held up. Not today. Time of this podcast, it's down 14%, trading at $16.54 a barrel. And again, WTI is at $11.20. Brent, again, I'm sorry, is at $16.50. Okay? That's what's taking place here as it's trading right now. Natural gas yesterday caught a slight bid, probably off of the back of thinking, oh, all operations are going to be shut down because natural gas is a byproduct as well of oil production. Okay, so they say, oh, well, okay, well, supply and demand is going to come back. Okay, we're not going to be producing as much, so that's okay, prices can go up. Well, they're back down today, trading at $1.81 per million British thermal units. Gasoline is trading at 55 cents. Gold and silver have also pulled back. Gold is at $1,685 an ounce. Silver is at $14.78 an ounce. And we're going to talk about that. But lastly, I just want to mention here, Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year Treasury note is yielding 0.55%. So again, another flight to safety, quote-unquote safety, in the U.S. Treasury market space, which nobody wants to buy except the Federal Reserve. Foreigners don't want to buy it. That's governments and individuals. Pensions don't want to buy it. Don't want to buy it. Money market funds and the Federal Reserve. That's about it. Unbelievable. Nobody wants it, which makes it junk as far as I'm concerned, because if the Federal Reserve wasn't here, interest rates would be skyrocketing. That's junk, folks. That's what it is. You also have, and we talked about this last week in the podcast, Oil Conundrum, when we were talking about the regulatory affairs, especially down in Texas with the Railroad Commission, which is the regulatory agency. Well, they voted, and they have voted not to cut back on supply and production. There will, however, be another vote, I believe, early May. And so that vote could obviously change. But, I mean, companies are going to stop producing anyway. There's nowhere to put it. Storage facilities are almost maxed out. There is no demand. These economies are not, quote unquote, reopening. And even if they do, they are not going to come roaring back. They're just not. Think about it logically. Hope is not a strategy. Listening to the President of the United States thinking that there's a whole bunch of pent-up demand, there isn't. There isn't. That's not how it works. We have debunked that lack of logic how many times here? It's just not there, folks. You got to get used to the new normal. All right. But in relation to the precious metals market and the gold-silver connection as far as how it sort of relates to what took place yesterday in the oil market, it's basically the opposite, okay? Because what do we have on a fundamental note, on a fundamental basis when it comes to the oil and gas market? Well, on the demand side, there is none. Very, very little. However, on the supply side, we are awash in it. Again, so much so that storage facilities are near capacity. You have tankers sitting out at sea with nowhere to be, yet they're loaded up. Okay? What did that cause to happen? Well, history. Negative pricing. Negative pricing. And even if it wasn't, $11 a barrel? $16 a barrel? Come on. Understand what's taking place here. On the flip side, what happens when you look at gold and silver? It's the opposite. You have a lot of buildup in demand. I don't think we've seen the tip of the iceberg yet when it comes to the physical demand for physical gold and silver. So in this case, you have high demand. But what about its supply? Not there. A lot of mines are shut down because of what's taking place with COVID-19. Even if mines are operational and if they're out of the country, if they're somewhere else, obviously it makes no difference. You have so many restrictions, so many travel restrictions, can't come over, can't fly it over, can't ship it over. It's not making its way into various countries. So the supply of it is low. This is the exact opposite of what's taking place in the oil and gas markets. So if what just took place in the oil market happened, I mean, how many people thought there was going to be negative pricing, especially to that degree, right? Well, then who's to say in due time that the exact opposite happens with gold and silver, meaning they explode higher in price? Because it's the same thing, ladies and gentlemen. These things trade in the futures, with futures contracts in the futures markets, right? A lot of it's on paper, but guess what? There is an actual physical exchange of the commodities, of the precious metals. If that is what the parties to these contracts want. A lot of times it's just paper trading. Somebody's speculating on the price of something, of corn, of pork bellies, of orange juice, of oil, of gas, of gold or silver. And they don't need to take physical possession of it. But sometimes, that the paper isn't good enough. Give me that gold, give me that silver, give me that barrel of oil. Or get it away from me, I don't want it. Whatever the case may be. So you understand, the exact opposite could happen with respect to gold and silver. There could be a huge squeeze, a huge run-up. Don't think it's possible? Well, did you think negative pricing in the oil market was possible? Especially to this degree? That's all I'm saying. Keep an open mind. And again, I don't give financial advice here. I give information. I give my opinion. I tell you what I do or what I might do. And I've been saying here for a long time, especially now, on the back of COVID-19, on the back of all of this reckless economic policy from one government after the next, from one central bank after the next, that you got to be diversified. And looking at gold and silver would do that. So look into it and see if it's right for you. And again, if you have it in your hand, you own it. You have it. It's not trading on some exchange somewhere. It's not somewhere else. It's in your pocket. It's in your safe. It's wherever you have it. You have it. Be careful with the ETFs, like I've stated, but you might be able to make it from them. look into gold and silver mining stocks. Take a look at them. See if it's right for you. Part of diversification. Might benefit if the price of those commodities, of those precious metals, take off. Because people say, yeah, you know what? Look, they're printing all this money. It's going out of style. It's worthless the more they print. That's how it works. It's supply and demand for money too, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just for gold and silver. It's not just for the oil and gas markets. It's everything. Even the value of a dollar. And people say, they're useless. They're not going to do anything for me. They're printing them. I want something that I think is at least going to hedge some of that weakness in that currency. And people look to gold. People look to silver. Probably gold first. But then once everybody realizes how expensive it is and they can't get their hands on it, well, then they're going to go to poor man's gold, which is silver, and they're going to have a difficult time getting their hands on that physically too. But at least it's cheaper than an ounce of gold. And so people will look to it and say, well, at least I'm going to get a little bit more from this. So pay attention. It could happen. It could happen. So I hope you understand that connection. A brief update when it comes to immigration. Well, I guess it's going to be a temporary suspension, maybe up to 60 days. And this has to do with immigrants who were looking for the ability to become a permanent resident here in the United States and obviously work to becoming a citizen of the United States. Of course, last night we were very short on details. It was pretty much a tweet. And there is some reporting out there today that even other departments within the government were unaware that the president was going to be doing this, specifically the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security. Nevertheless, the president tweeted it out and discussed a little bit more about that today. So again, some of those details, this has to do with people looking to become a permanent resident, because we questioned yesterday, is this going to take into consideration migrant workers who come to help out so many industries and businesses in this country, especially agriculture, out in the fields picking crops, all right? At a time when we have food shortages in some degree, other cases, we're destroying food. Can't make heads or tails of this stuff. But nevertheless, if you don't have workers out there to help pick these crops, well, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get food shortages. And then you're going to see food inflation. Make no mistake about it. So that's your update there. We'll keep you posted if there's anything breaking. But again, we question the timing of it as well. Why now? Why now? You stopped the flights from China. You stopped the flights from Europe. You pretty much closed all non-essential travel to Canada and Mexico to begin with. Why now, Mr. President? Why do it now? 22 million Americans have filed for unemployment. You know that number's higher, and it will be once we get the numbers this week. And we know there's a lot of Americans, unfortunately, who are not even working, but may be, quote unquote, employed because their business was able to secure a loan from the government or a grant from the government. And one of those stipulations is you have to keep your people on a payroll. So there might not be any work, but you're still technically employed, which is a good thing for those people, especially if they have benefits, because if they were unemployed, they would have lost their benefits or it would have been completely 100% out of pocket. So that's that. We'll keep you updated. Again, the CDC director is warning that a second wave can happen and that it could be worse than the first, because now it would be truly in tandem with, obviously, the flu season of 2020. So you're going to be dealing with multiple respiratory illnesses. Now, what we've been told, again, I am no medical expert, but what we are told from those who claim to be medical experts and who I believe to be medical experts, when it comes to a vaccination, it's going to take 18 months, maybe a year if we're lucky. Well, we're not there yet, folks, not even close. All right? Maybe we know they're working on therapeutics. We'll see if those work. Hopefully they do. But make no mistake about it. We can see a second wave. When you study these pandemics, there typically are two or three waves. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities. On occasion, the second or the third wave is sometimes worse than the first wave. So it can be. Social distancing, everything that's coming out, I mean, the social behavioral changes that are going to ensue, we've talked about them here all the time. But think about it if you're a restaurant. What happens if a city says, okay, we got to change the local ordinances. Got to change some local laws here to better reflect social distancing. You can't have that many tables in here. You can't have people sitting back to back in booths. It's got to be every other booth. It's got to be every other table. You got to get rid of these tables. You can't have 500 people in here anymore, even though it was up to code. Can't do it. Can't have it. You got to cut it down to 400 people. It's not just a matter of losing 100% of your business for a month. What happens if you lose 20% of your business for 3 months? Can you survive? That's what we were talking about when that podcast, A Death by a Thousand Cuts, and so many other things that we discuss here on a daily basis. Those are the questions you have to ponder. It's not just being shut down for a month and a half. It's what happens after the fact. Okay, you lose 100% of your business or 90% of your business for a month. Okay. Maybe you have some savings, you can do it. Maybe you can mortgage your house to get some money. Maybe you can get government assistance, etc., etc. What happens if you lose 20, 25% month after month for the next several months? Can you survive? Especially when the government has jumped in to be the savior of everything, which they are not, to prop up companies that should have went away, that should go out of business. I take no pleasure in saying this, but that's just the reality of the matter. Because if you keep up zombie companies, it doesn't matter what size the business is. We've given this example before. If you have restaurants on the margin, you have a company, one of these restaurants should have went out of business, but now the government keeps them alive. Well, now they're in competition with another restaurant who may have been healthier, who may have survived. That healthier restaurant would have picked up that extra business, which would have gone a very long way in this environment. Now, those customers have the option. Yeah, I could go to the healthy restaurant, restaurant A, but I still got this one, restaurant B, who would have went out of business, but the government saved them. I'm going to go there. Restaurant B was going out of business. They're most likely still going to go out of business. But now you're hurting restaurant A as well, because now they're losing that business that they would have had otherwise. This is why the government's got to get out of picking winners and losers. And of course, given what took place yesterday in the oil market, Thunder Thumbs had a tweet, had to make comments, had to send his energy secretary out there talking about, well, we're going to work on something, putting a plan together to save jobs in this country, in the energy sector, and these companies. What? This is called rebalancing, ladies and gentlemen. This is how markets are supposed to operate. You do not pick winners and losers. Lower oil prices, you know who that helps? That would help the airlines. Are they struggling? You better believe it. You better believe it. What about the consumer? Is the consumer struggling? You better believe it. So who has to win here? Who has to lose? This is rebalancing. This is how this plays out. You want to save the steel industry and bail out the steel industry and make sure that they're supported? Would lower steel prices have helped out any other industry? Maybe construction? Would they have benefited from lower steel prices? I bet you they would have. What about the auto industry? Would they have benefited from lower steel prices? I bet so. Picking winners and losers doesn't work. That's not how it's supposed to be in this country. One after the next. Democrat, Republican, President of the United States. Let's give money to everybody. Congress approving $500 billion, nearly another $500 billion that we don't have. Most of it for smaller, mid-sized companies. For a lifeline. Will they get it in time? Who knows? Probably not. Probably not. But if you're Wall Street, if you're a major corporation, you get money like that. Trillions. Trillions in aggregate. Very few strings attached. Don't have to worry about a thing. Small business, the small guy getting screwed once again. And he's going to have to pay for all of this nonsense on the other side too, with higher taxes, higher inflation, lower cost of living. You awake? Financial coup d'etat in your face. Nobody says a damn thing. $500 billion we don't have. We were talking about, what, $3.8 trillion deficit was the projection? Well, it's going to be over $4 trillion now, isn't it? Isn't it? You got states already lining up, which we said was going to happen. They're already running out of money for unemployment insurance. This is a disaster. Talk about pensions, unemployment insurance, infrastructure. The next package is probably going to pertain to this. It's probably going to pertain to bailing out states and localities. That's what's next. And then maybe it'll either be a part of that. I don't know what phase we're on, phase two, phase 23 and a half. I don't know. Then it's going to be infrastructure. Or again, they might package that in with helping the states. They might say, well, we got to do it. So there's another $2 trillion. Is that going to be a $6 trillion deficit? Which is going to be a deficit as a percentage of GDP above 30%. We're close to it. Anybody paying attention? Anybody care? The Federal Reserve, their balance sheet, $6 trillion? $6 trillion? Same thing. Their balance sheet is almost a third of this country's GDP. And it might be, if this continues throughout the remainder of this year, GDP could fall through the floor too. So it very well could be at 30% or higher. And if the Federal Reserve is not done either. So it will be. It'll be well above 30% by when this is all said and done. Then you have global central bank printing an aggregate, staggering number. As I stated at the top of the podcast, $23 plus trillion and counting. They've printed the equivalent of the GDP of the United States of America, a little bit more. What do we have to show for it? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. The International Monetary Fund. Well, now we got to consider debt forgiveness, which we said they were going to start contemplating, and here they are. Here they are, because all of these countries around the world, especially third world countries, they can't survive. They have the dollar doom loop, which is the podcast we talked about. They have energy prices falling. Most of them are highly dependent on exporting oil and gas for government revenues. Many of these are the same countries that were protesting before COVID-19. What do you think they're going to do now? And the IMF thinks that $1 trillion is going to do it. We've just blown through $350 billion to small and mid-sized businesses. Wasn't enough. Now we're going to throw another $500 on top of it. That's the United States of America. You have countries, entire countries, lining up to the spigot at the IMF for $1 trillion. You know how fast that's going to go if they can even manage that? And where does the IMF get their money? From a whole bunch of governments. Everybody's got to put into the pot. Everybody's got to put a little bit into the kitty. And then they disperse it where they want. Buckle up, folks. A barrel of problems. That's what we're talking about. And you really want to get the last kicker of today's podcast. Here's an article from the AP, the Associated Press. UN Food Agency chief. World on brink of a, quote, a hunger pandemic. All right? So just understand. $23 trillion was just printed. They're still doing it. Federal governments around the world, they're throwing more money out there. Most of them don't have it, so that's more more central bank printing. $23 trillion and nothing to show for it. It's not stimulative. It's filling a hole that is getting deeper and wider by the second. All right? And now you got people starving to death. Here it is. The head of the UN Food Agency warned Tuesday that as the world is dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, it is also, quote, on the brink of a hunger pandemic, end quote. That could lead to, quote, multiple famines of biblical proportions. Multiple famines of biblical proportions, end quote, within a few months if immediate action isn't taken. World Food Program Executive Director David Beasley told the UN Security Council that even before COVID-19 became an issue, he was telling world leaders that, quote, 2020 would be facing the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II, end quote. That's because of wars in Syria, Yemen, and elsewhere, locust swarms in Africa, frequent natural disasters and economic crises, including in Lebanon, Congo, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Beasley said today, 821 million people go to bed hungry every night all over the world. 821 million people go to bed hungry every night all over the world. Put that into some perspective. $23 trillion, most of it going to bail out Wall Street and other financial sectors and centers around the world. Most of it going to bail out major corporations. 821 million people starving to death every night. That's what, two and a half United States of America? A further 135 million people are facing crisis levels of hunger or worse. And a new World Food Program analysis shows that as a result of COVID-19, an additional 130 million people could be pushed to the brink of starvation by the end of 2020. He said in the video briefing that WFP, the World Food Program, is providing food to nearly 100 million people on any given day, including about 30 million people who literally depend on us to stay alive. Beasley, who is recovering from COVID-19, said if those 30 million people can't be reached, our analysis shows that 300,000 people could starve to death every single day over a three-month period. Our analysis shows that 300,000 people could starve to death every single day over a three-month period. That's about 27 million people in aggregate, folks. And that doesn't include increased starvation due to the coronavirus. In a worst-case scenario, we could be looking at famine in about three dozen countries, and in fact, in 10 of these countries, we already have more than 1 million people per country who are on the verge of starvation. According to WFP, the 10 countries with the worst food crises in 2019 were Yemen, Congo, Afghanistan, Venezuela, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Syria, Sudan, Nigeria, and Haiti. Beasley said in many countries, the food crisis is the result of conflict. But he said he raised the prospect of a hunger pandemic because there is also a real danger that more people could potentially die from the economic impact of COVID-19 than from the virus itself. That's most definitely a true statement. The WFP chief said lockdowns and economic recession are expected to lead to major income losses for the working poor. Make no mistake about that. If globalization is going to take a hit because of this, if there's going to be more nationalization, if more countries are going to start bringing their supply chains back home or closer to them, that is going to affect many, many of these countries which are already suffering to begin with. Continuing, he pointed to a sharp drop in overseas remittances that will hurt countries such as Haiti, Nepal, and Somalia. A loss of tourism revenue, which, for example, will damage Ethiopia, where it accounts for 47% of total exports, and the collapse of oil prices, which will have a significant impact in lower-income countries like South Sudan, where oil accounts for almost 99% of total exports. It will also have major ramifications, this is my ad lib here, for Nigeria, which is the most populous country in Africa. As the UN's logistics backbone, Beasley said WFP has played a major role in tackling COVID-19 by delivering millions of pieces of protective equipment, testing kits, and face masks to 78 countries on behalf of the World Health Organization and by running humanitarian air services to get doctors, nurses, and humanitarian staff into countries that need help. He urged greater humanitarian access, coordinated action to deliver aid, and an end to trade disruptions, and accelerated and increased funding, including $350 million to set up a network of logistics hubs and transport systems to keep supply chains running worldwide. $350 million. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what they've printed thus far. Will they get it? Probably not, because the African nations, Middle Eastern nations, they've been asking through the United Nations as well in relation to the locust swarms for about a couple hundred million. They haven't gotten it because the swarms are now 20 times larger. Ending this article here, the truth is we do not have time on our side. So let's act wisely and let's act fast. I do believe that with our expertise and partnerships, we can bring together the teams and the programs necessary to make certain the COVID-19 pandemic does not become a humanitarian and food crisis catastrophe. Amen to that. But good luck, because governments are run amok. Nothing happens quickly when it comes to government support, unless it's the Federal Reserve or another central bank. If you're close to the tit of a central bank, you get the cash. You get it real quick. Real quick. If you're well connected politically, you get the money real quick. But if you're starving to death, you're going to have to wait. Sorry, no can do. You're just gonna have to sit there and wait. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to wait. A barrel of problems. It's only April. What do you think's going to happen? We've been warning about this. I take no pleasure in this. It upsets me to no end. There is no leadership. None whatsoever. Nobody tells us the truth. We have no idea what's going on. It makes no difference to the country, makes no difference to the language, makes no difference to quote-unquote leader. There are none. The only people that were the leaders in this world were the people who were protesting against all odds, and now they're shut down because of COVID-19. Things were bad before. They're worse now. What do you think they're going to do after this? They have nothing to lose. So what do you think is going to happen? I don't like the picture it paints, but you know how humans behave. You got nothing to lose? Give it a shot. And who knows what that means? And it's coming to a theater near you. We're already starting to see the cracks in various states across the country who want to get back to work, want to open up the economy. I understand it. I understand it. But again, I still ask the question like I did yesterday. To perpetuate what system? Because nobody's challenging this. President loves these stimulus packages, as far as I can tell. Democrats seem to love them. Republicans seem to love them. $4 trillion deficits, $5, $6 trillion deficits. Nobody cares. You're going to get your $1,200, sit down, shut up. And then ask yourself where that money's going. Is it going to pay yourself, or is it just a pass-through? Are you just a middleman? Are you just a pass-through to the credit card company, to a financial wing of a auto company, to some other bank for your mortgage, paying off your rent to your landlord? Well, he probably has a mortgage on your on the property, too. It's just a pass-through. No bailouts. You understand? Too late, of course. Nobody listens to me. But if you want to start something, well, you know, go to the Capitol News, find our recent letter, Representation and Recourse, make it your own, keep my name on it, send it to your congressmen and senators. Please do it. Peaceful revolution. Leave the Republican and Democrat Party. I don't care what party you affiliate with yourself with after that, but leave them. There is no two-party system. It's one system. It's one system. Wake up. There is no difference amongst them. They have abandoned you. You don't owe them anything. Not a thing. Leave them. They will start to wake up. A barrel of problems, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. We'll catch you here next time. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capitol News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.